Hey folks, this is Christine Blackburn, and I want to personally thank each and every one of you guys for listening to Storyworthy. Storyworthy has more listeners than ever before, and it's thanks to you guys. So please tell a friend, a coworker, or a family member about the Storyworthy podcast, and then we can keep this train rolling. Now let's get on with it.
This is Jimmy Dore, and you're listening to the Storyworthy podcast.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finney.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we're coming to you from St. Mary's Hospital on the east side of Milwaukee, overlooking Lake Michigan.
Wow, man. We haven't been in Milwaukee in like 2 weeks.
I know. I missed it. I wanted to go back. You know, they just recently, very near here on North Avenue, they built a Whole Foods.
Oh, is that right?
Ooh.
A Whole Foods in Milwaukee. What
and
of it?
They actually have, I'm not kidding, I went over there, and they have regular bratwurst. They have turkey bratwurst, and they have buffalo bratwurst.
Wow, that's
what
a choice.
That's how Whole Foods, yeah, in Milwaukee, you need a choice of bratwurst, but that's how Whole Foods blends into Milwaukee, is to come up with lower fat brats.
Right. Well, that
none works of this,
out,
like, oh, a quinoa burger. It's like, no. Fuck you.
Do you think there's
the
kale
hipsters
here? Is there kale in Whole Foods?
There's probably kale, but it's probably covered in some sort of pork fat.
And fried, of course.
Yeah, because the side here is the hipster part of town, which is awesome. And well, they love a Whole Foods, but it's still Milwaukee.
So why are we here? Why are we
Well, we're here because our subject tonight is prostate cancer.
Whoa,
so
prostate
we come to
cancer.
My favorite, I don't know, it's weird. It's like my favorite hospital in Milwaukee. Not because I've ever been there. I think I was in the emergency room once. But it's literally one of the most beautiful spots for hope. It's literally on a bluff overlooking Lake Park, which is on Lake Michigan. It's mm-hmm. one of the most beautiful spots for a hospital you could possibly imagine.
Well, if I were to be sick, I think I would like to be there.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I remember as a kid, it's a landmark. It's like, oh, you go by St. Mary's, you can go down the hill.
I see.
And so anyway, we're talking about prostate cancer.
That's right.
That's
because tonight,
subject.
Our guest, Jimmy Dore, he brings forth the topic, prostate cancer.
Yeah.
Jimmy Dore, Hannes, he is a smart man. So
he's
a comedian, right? But he's more than a comedian. He's
a denture wearer. No.
He's a social commentator. He's a satirist.
He's a short sleeve wearer.
He's on a different level than just comedian. Do you know what I mean?
Right. He's got a whole.
He has a message.
And he has politics. He's a political man.
He has a point of view, and he sticks on his path. You know what I mean?
Yes.
He's never going to waffle. He's never going to be independent on anything. He has his point of view,
yes.
And it's very specific.
Yes. He's never going to be dependent, I think he meant to say.
He's
always independent. He's always independent.
Yes, but I was thinking politically. In other words, like he's a Democrat. That's it. He's not going to be waffling.
He's
shaking his head.
No, he's independent because there are this. We could talk about this later, but I would assume that most people who really think about politics and can realize this two-party idea really doesn't work because the Democrats have to let in. The Democrats are supposed to be left of center, but they're barely left of center. And the Republicans used to be, they were right. But they were kind of just to the right. But then they had to let in a whole bunch of really right-wing wackos, and their Democrats had to let in a whole run of really left-wing people, both of whom really don't agree with the majority of either Democrats or Republicans. So the Republicans are getting fucked over because the Republican Party used to be like, hey, I'm sort of a businessman, and I own a hardware store in Minnesota, and I don't want to pay a lot of taxes. And I think we should have civil defense. That was it.
Right.
Now they're completely, the Tea Party is pulling them so far to the right to the nutball land that like a normal human being who happens to be a Republican is like powerless in that party.
Right.
And it happened to them, but it'll happen to the Democrats too. We need at least four parties. We need like the Tea Party needs to exist, obviously, but it needs to be its own party.
Mm-hmm.
You have the Tea Party, then you have the Republicans. Republicans are people that you would, that, say, a nice good old Hollywood liberal like me would disagree with, but we could actually have an argument in words as opposed to him telling me I'm a communist.
You would like Ronald Reagan as a person.
Maybe you don't like his
politics.
Ronald Reagan I don't think was quite as nice as people think he is. But, yeah, Ronald Reagan was not, you know who started the Environmental Protecting Agency? Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon created the Environmental Protection Agency. That's how far the Republican Party has come from being completely like, they were kind of righty, but they were also like human beings who were like, we shouldn't destroy the planet. That's like bad business. Yeah. At the very least, it's bad capitalism to destroy the planet, which you could make money off of. Yep. So anyhow, I would think that Jimmy is more like, nothing's 100%.
Right.
The Democrats.
Well, I hear what you're saying. In other words, he might say, if capitalism is so great, then why are they lying about things?
Yeah. But the Democrats are like, sometimes they're very liberal and sometimes they're impossible to differentiate from Republicans.
But when we look at history, it's almost like people get liberal very quickly when they look at what has happened in the past.
Yeah. If you look at history, you learn from it, you'll become realizing.
I mean, like, for goodness sake, I mean, think about gay marriage and the legalization of marijuana. I mean, just those two things alone. I mean, it's practically
archaic.
Oh, I
know. It's going to be one of those things where it's going to seem impossible that it was ever.
You drank out
like
of a different
slavery.
Water fountain?
Yeah, it's like
what?
Black people couldn't vote.
Yeah.
That seems
like. I couldn't smoke a joint? Are you kidding me?
I heard a guy once say he was actually very smart. He was like, at some point, it'll just be like people who are like, I don't think gays should get married. And people be like, look, grandpa's from another time.
Oh,
you can't argue with him.
I think kids are already feeling
seem
that way.
Completely impossible that there was not gay marriage.
Right.
And it's going to seem completely impossible that we had slaves in this country.
We had slaves. My
this
daughter.
Is crazy.
My daughter is amazed every time on the radio when you hear about, the 30th state allowing gay marriage. And my daughter even questions me, like, what does that even mean? And I'm like, well, you used to not be able to get married. And that surprises her, I mean, so in other words, it's the generations already here.
Right, exactly. Your daughter's generation will be like, I don't know what the fuck you people were.
I don't know what they're going to call her generation. I mean, she's not a.
Oh, let's see.
Gen X, Gen Y, Gen.
And then we got millennials were the the most recent one.
I think she's further. She's 2007. So what does that make her?
It's going to make her.
I don't know what that makes her.
20, an otter.
All right. So Jimmy Dore is here tonight. I'm so excited to hear his story about prostate cancer. He's here. So I'm hoping this means, he has survived. If he in fact is the one who had.
Yeah, you never know. We hit a lot. And he was like, I don't mean to be a downer, but it's like we get. How many cancer stories have we done?
Well, it's just that if you tell somebody to bring a true story, any story, and they've had cancer, it's probably sticking out in their head as one of the top.
Yeah, so we've had. So you told your cancer story
of your life.
I've told the story about my mother having cancer.
Well, I appreciate the stories because, as you know, I'm a cancer survivor.
So how many do we have?
I'm always interested because, and I've also had a lot of friends who have passed of cancer. So it's kind of like this thing that exists, and I try to celebrate everybody who has gotten through it.
Yeah, exactly. Ugh,
I don't know. Okay, prostate cancer. There's some problems here because a lot of men have died, including my hero, Dan Fogelberg.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he didn't know he had prostate cancer until very, very late stage and died when he was 56 years old.
Yeah. Jan Hooks recently died of some form of cancer.
But this is prostate cancer. That's what I want to talk about. Frank Zappa, Johnny Ramone, Dennis Hopper. Charlton Heston, Timothy Leary, Bud Abbott, Bill Bixby.
Bud Abbott is dead? What?
Bixby? Wasn't he on Family Affair?
No. Bill, oh my Lord. Let me dive into my well of trivia. Bill Bixby was on The Courtship of Eddie's father.
That's right.
Then he played.
Oh, I love
then
that
he
show.
Was on The Incredible Hulk.
Yes, Bill
in
Bixby.
In between, hang
so
on.
Sexy.
No. We can masturbate to Bill Bixby later. That's the most horrible sounding thing I've ever heard. Let me tell you something, and we'll see. Jimmy's off in another room now, but he's looking at me like, in between Courtship of Eddie's father and The Incredible Hulk, Bill Bixby had a little show that I like called The Magician. It was part of the Thursday mystery movie lineup, I believe, like McCloud and Columbo. He was a crime-solving millionaire magician.
Finally.
He lived in an apartment at the top on the top floor of the Magic Castle.
Terrific.
He was a millionaire, and he had a private 747, and he would travel the country doing magic shows and solving crimes. When I was 12 years old, I thought this was the greatest fucking show I'd ever heard of in my life.
It really has every element that you want.
It's all so.
And nothing says the 1970s like the 747.
A private 747.
That airplane
with the spiral
was
staircase.
Such a big fucking deal in that decade. Yeah. It was a big, big deal.
No, that was a huge advance ahead from everything else. With the two, I mean, have you ever watched, by the way, we were on a show and we talked about Airport 77?
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, the idea that they had like a VCR, which was about the size of the table we're at right now.
Yeah.
And there's a piano player. The blind guy was the piano player.
They, oh, they were all on the airplane. And the best part about Airport 77 was the fact that it landed in the bottom of the ocean wasn't the problem.
Yeah.
They had the electricity at the bottom of the ocean. The plane was still lit up at the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
In fact, that's the tableau on the cover of Airport 77 is the airplane at the bottom
underwater
of the ocean.
But with the lights
are on. Yeah. That wasn't the problem. The problem was that there were, number one, art thieves on the plane.
Right.
Number two, they landed in the Bermuda Triangle.
Yes.
So there was just
this is where
issue
it all went
after
wrong.
Issue. It was a lot of problems.
Jimmy's looking at us through the window. He's like, what does this have to do with prostates?
Listen,
what is
prostate
nothing?
Cancer. Several men have survived prostate cancer, including Jerry Brown, Rudy Giuliani, Robert De Niro, Colin Powell.
I didn't know Robert De Niro. That's
yeah,
interesting.
He sure did. Nelson Mandela.
Because he looked at his prostate. Now, he said, you fucking with me? You fucking with me?
Yes, James Brown, he didn't pass of prostate cancer, but he had it. Same as Nelson Mandela. He had it, but he didn't pass from that.
Yeah.
So what is the what's the test for prostate cancer?
Well,
honest,
now, you know,
and have you had it?
Well, the first time I ever got checked for it was Kaiser Permanente, and my doctor, his office was on Sunset Boulevard, and his name was Dr. Dong Shin. So when you're on Sunset Boulevard and a guy's got his finger in your ass and his name is Dr. Dong, you're like, ah, oh, I love Hollywood. I love it. But most recently, what they do is they mail you like a vial.
What?
Yes, through
really?
The mail. They send you a piece of paper. You're supposed to wipe your ass with a piece of paper. Then you take this little, like a little spatula thing. You get a little sample.
Of what?
Poop.
Oh,
what
really?
Where did I lose you with the wiping your ass with a piece
of paper?
Wait a minute.
Seriously.
Yes.
They test for prostate cancer via your poop.
Through the mail.
This is the craziest goddamn
it's not like you go in and you give a urine sample. They mail you this thing and you say, okay, take a little bit, and then you screw this little spatula thing attached to a cap that screws into this plastic glass vial.
So nobody's
then
touching the feces.
Then you put that into a bag that says biohazard material.
No doubt about
and
it.
And you seal that bag, and then you put it in the pre-addressed envelope, and you mail it back to Kaiser Permanente.
And then who has to open that? On the other end,
the
seriously.
Newest employee at Kaiser Permanente, I'm supposing?
And now he's not even thinking he's in show business at all. Not show business.
No, he's like, he got it. He wanted to be like on ER where he was a heroic doctor with a halo, you know, around his head as he comes in with a gunshot victim. And he's like in a mail room full of poop.
Yeah, he's not Chad Everett, that's for sure.
Chad Everett.
Medical Center. Now that was a hot
was
doctor
a
in the 70s.
Chad Everett. Yeah,
he was good looking.
Anyhow, so that reminds me, I actually have that sitting on my desk. I have neglected to send in my poop for this year.
Oh, my gosh.
So
wait, how often
that.
Are you supposed to do this?
I think it's like once a year.
Yeah.
So now they're like, we don't need to stick your finger up your ass every year. We can do this, and we'll stick our finger up your ass every 5 years or something
wait,
like that.
Wait, isn't the test where they go underneath your balls and they say, cough again?
No.
What's that test?
That's for hernias. Okay.
You act like I should know
they
this.
They don't go
I don't
under
have that
your
balls.
Okay, no. They don't go. Yeah, but you were married.
So that doesn't mean I
look,
ever
you
gave
handle
my husband
a lot of testicles.
Prostate cancer.
You're saying that
I never
look, how do I know so much about menstruation and all the products involved, and you don't know anything about checking men for hernias?
No, I've
you don't
never
go
done
under
that.
Your balls. You have to go behind your balls to the two holes the balls are coming out of, because that's where the hernia would come out.
Are you lying to me?
So you cough. The reason you cough is to put pressure on your system. The guy can feel whether there's an abnormality or whether it's a weak.
I see.
Wall of your
okay
system,
your
like intestines and stuff like that.
I see.
So he's not actually, I guess where you think, yeah, he's not actually cupping your balls. Your balls have nothing to do
now,
with it. They're in the way.
If you had testicular cancer, that
well,
would
that would
be a ball
different.
Issue.
That's a completely, yeah. That's
there
complete.
Would be a feeling of the balls in that respect.
Yes, yes. Or if I just lived in West Hollywood.
Listen, prostate cancer, if all you got to do is shit in a cup once a year, I don't see why everybody doesn't get tested.
You don't shit in a cup. You shit in your toilet and wipe your ass with a special piece of paper. Now,
whatever.
It's a special lint-free piece of paper.
Whatever.
So you don't get, like, your toilet paper lint in with your poop.
Whatever.
Obviously, we are medical professionals here.
Well, anyway, listen, this is this sounds like a cancer that can be preventable.
Yes,
curable.
Yes, it used to be apparently many years ago not preventable or not something that
as
you
long
would,
as men get tested. I mean, that's the most
important.
Yeah,
well, it's like anything else. It's like any of the other cancers, because now you can test for breast cancer and you can test for ovarian cancer. Don't they have more advanced ovarian cancer tests now?
Yeah, I'm not
than
sure.
They used to? I don't know why. I think they do.
I just still do that once a year pap
smear
thing.
By the way, we had to get the boner pill out of the way before we got around to the prostate poops. You know, it's like, hey, let's save men's lives. No. First, give me a boner. I don't want to live if I can't get a boner.
There's so much behind that, though. I mean, a man likes to feel respected, and if his penis is flaccid, that's hard to do. Do you know what I mean? I think the whole thing behind Viagra and Cialis is respect. That's it.
Well, that's true.
So if you can buy respect, and now you can, you're respected.
Right.
You walk
By the
around.
Way, do you know why? Why
do you know what I mean?
You realize Viagra and all that stuff was accidental. They were researching heart medication to increase the blood flow for heart patients. And these guys were in the trial, and they're all like, doc?
Wow.
I think I could hammer a nail with this thing right now. And they're like, how come all of our patients are so aroused by this heart medic? And then they figured out, oh, well, here's the side effect is you get boners. Switch it around. Now, the main effect is you get a boner, and the side effect is you get some sort of heart problem. But who cares? You got a boner.
And that's when they say, if you have an erection for more than 6 hours, let us know.
4 hours.
4 hours. Well, I don't know. How many hours could you... I've never been with a guy who's had an erection
for 4 hours.
Well, of
course not, because it's completely unnatural, and that's why you better get to go see a doctor.
I see.
What you have, of course, as we know from Cialis, is a boner that can punch through the sides of two, not one, cast iron tubs.
Yeah, because there's always
the
bathtub.
The couple in the tubs.
I did why a Cialis they, commercial.
I know. Why aren't they in the same tub? You're telling us you're going to have sex, you're going to have sex, you're going to have sex, and then they show them in two different tubs. That makes no sense at all.
In the Cialis commercial I did, yes. I have to go turn the water off in the bathtub. So, bam, bathtub shot.
Right.
There's always a bathtub shot.
Yeah, you overflowed the bathtub and you burned the turkey because you were having so much sex.
That's
that
right.
was the plot of your no, I'm
yeah,
serious.
No, I know.
That was
the plot
of your
yeah.
ad.
Yeah.
You and your husband run back in looking all flushed, like, oh my, oh, I burnt the turkey. Ooh. And this was a Canadian Cialis ad, right?
Yeah, it was kind of cute, actually. I don't
yeah.
know. And
Canada, they don't care for that kind of sex thing.
All right,
very
you guys.
Polite people.
So listen, our storyteller tonight,
yeah,
Jimmy
I got a
Dore,
boner, eh?
Jimmy Dore is here, and he's got a story to tell. But before he comes up, I did want to remind you guys that if you'd like to support the Storyworthy podcast, you should.
You should. Send us a picture of your boner. No, I'm kidding. Do not send us a picture. First of all, you can go on storywithpodcast.com. You can click on the Amazon ad, do your holiday shopping, and we get a little taste. You could go on our Patreon page through storywithpodcast.com. You could maybe send us $2, $3 a month. How about that's your New Year's resolution?
Yeah, how about that? How about that? Support the people that you love. How about that?
You want to hear boner? You know, we really need to change the name of the show to Boner Talk. Boner Worthy. How many hits would we get if
I've
it was called
I've had a couple of emails
worthy?
That have said that they really like when we talk about sex. But it's like, well, of course you do. That's, you know what I mean?
It's, yeah, that's what it is. It's like,
for goodness sake.
Yeah, so, and or go to iTunes and subscribe to us.
Yeah, that's always a good thing to do. And here's something you can do, folks. Doesn't cost any money at all. Why not mention Storyworthy on your social media sites today? That's right. Over at the Twitter, @Storyworthy. Or, of course, you can mention us on Facebook. And that sort of thing, Hannes, it's one of those things where, you know, you tell two people and then they tell two people. And so on and so on, and retweet and favorite and like, and you know, it's just
poke. Is the poking gone? I think the poking
still
went away.
Poke. I don't poke. In fact, I find it very upsetting, especially when it's a poke from somebody I know has passed. Do you know what I mean? I know like 3 or 4 people have died. Somehow they're still on Facebook and they poke me.
Wow, that is scary.
Ladies and gentlemen, wherever you are, stay tuned because Jimmy Dore is on his way here. On Storyworthy, we have storyteller, author Margot Lightman.
And I'll be talking about finding my match through finding our love of scheming.
That's next time on Storyworthy.
Hey, this is Troy Conrad. I'm trying to sound like Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Storyworthy. Cocksucker.
And we're back. We have left St. Mary's, and we have gone down the street, down Downer Avenue, one of my favorite streets. They used to have the right next to the theater that always showed the Woody Allen movies. They have rebuilt my favorite place in Milwaukee. I mean to say, Pizza Man.
Pizza Man.
Pizza Man. It burned down, and they have rebuilt it.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful.
I never understood that that thing people have, though, with pizza, you know, like in their town, you know, like Chicago deep dish, man, and fucking Philly, Philly pizza, New York pizza. It's like, you guys, I don't know. Everybody makes good pizza.
No, no, no. That's not my, yeah, that's not my thing. It's like I've eaten, yeah, right. Well, pizza, you know, it's an old joke. Pizza is like sex. Even if it's bad, that's still better than no pizza.
Yeah.
You know, there's no such thing as pizza so bad you won't eat it.
There's still bread and cheese.
We had, yeah, we had a pizza the other night from some place called Bravo Pizza, and it's all Asians, and the first one we got there was like, this is awesome, this will be our pizza neighborhood pizza place. We got second one, like, no sauce, like weighing, just forgot there's supposed to be sauce on a pizza, and I'm eating this and it's cheese and like bread, and I'm like, what the fuck, there's no sauce. We ate the whole fucking thing. Now did we not eat the pizza?
Did you
no
call
we
complained them, did about you compl- the did you call
no
Well, I mean, I was just
because...
That's so ridiculous.
So racist.
Stereotypically horrible.
No,
that's
it was
horrible.
I think there was just like a... Like, instead of a ladle of sauce, there was like a spoonful of sauce.
Right.
Like, somebody had the wrong utensil or something. Anyhow, my point is, I still ate it.
Okay, and here we are in Milwaukee on Downer Street, and Jimmy
Downer
Dore is
Avenue,
here.
Excuse me.
Oh, boy.
Named after Judge Jason Downer, an important figure in the foundation of Milwaukee.
All right, you guys, Jimmy Dore is here right now. Like I said, he's a social commentator and a satirist, and he's the host of his own podcast, The Jimmy Dore Show. Now, his new book, Your Country Is Just Not That Into You, is available now, and I'll tell you, Hannes, he's so bright and he's so interesting. It's a real treat to have him here, because usually, I mean, I'm just saying, our guests aren't always this smart. That's all
right.
I'm saying.
We do have many moronic guests. Now we do record this next to a mental institution.
No, the point is that we have entertaining guests on.
Right.
Entertaining doesn't always add up to intelligence. That's all.
That's absolutely true. And intelligence, by the way, not always adding up to entertaining.
Exactly. You can find Jimmy on Twitter at Jimmy_Dore, and also at his website, JimmyDoreComedy.com. All right, folks, wherever you are, put your hands together for Jimmy Dore.
So I guess I'll give you a little background before I jump into the story. I come from a big family. There's 12 kids in my family. That's true. And people always say to me, you'll learn a lot about life growing up in a big family. And what I say is, yeah, I think the biggest thing I learned is I'm easily replaced. Right? Like, I knew if I died, it was not going to put a big dent in my family's plans. Like, I knew I couldn't imagine my mom sitting around, oh, no, Jimmy's dead. What am I going to do now with just the 11 of you? I guess I'll have a muffin. So this story. So my second oldest brother, his name is David. And he started when he was 17 years old. He was a senior in high school. He got a job working for White Castle Hamburgers in the Midwest. And when he graduated high school, they made him assistant manager and they gave him a car. That was like a bonus. That's when they used to do stuff like that, I guess. And I remember he had a Gran Torino. It was pretty cool. And anyway, so he's been eating White Castle's three meals a day. And, you know, he's been firmly ensconced in the meat industry in America. And it's always funny when we go out to dinner together. You know, he's always teasing me because I'm trying to get a Caesar salad or something. And he's always getting meat. And I'm always saying, you can't eat anything anymore. You can't eat meat because it's got the hormones. You can't eat chicken because they're all jacked up with the thing, and you can't eat pigs because you get the MRSA. You can't eat fish because of the mercury. What are you going to eat? So this is our conversations, right? So cut to the chase. I get a phone call from him, I don't know, maybe about a year ago. And he says, hey, Jimmy, I just got back from the doctor, and turns out I have prostate cancer. And so my doctor told me that I'm supposed to call all my brothers and tell them that they need to go get checked. And I was like, oh, okay, that sounds, that's too bad. You know, I told him, sorry to hear it. You know, he was going to get treatment for it. In fact, he came out to California to get treatment from a new proton therapy. And anyway, he was all good. So it got rid of it. He came out. He stayed here for 3 months. He went to this place in Yorba Linda. And so he was all fine, and he kept telling me, did you get checked yet? And I'm like, no, I didn't get checked. No, I'm going to get checked because I'm afraid to get checked. I don't want to get checked, you know, because I'm not going to do anyway, I'm not going to do chemo, right? I'm not. I'm one of those guys, right? I'll just die. So he kept bugging me, you better get checked. And I'm like, I'm not doing it. So cut to about 2 months after the last time he was bugging me to get checked. I wake up in the morning, and I don't know how the rest of you people wake up, but I wake up with a lot of stuff on my mind, and I wake up usually like this, fuck, 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 shit, fuck, 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 shit, fuck, 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 damn it, damn, fuck, because it's all the shit I got to do, all the stuff I haven't done, all the things I know I'll never get done, all the things, and so it just comes crashing up on me as soon as I wake up in the morning, and then, of course, I walk down the hallway. You know, because I'm all the stuff in my, oh, what am I going to do for my podcast? I got to do a thing for my, who gives a shit? And so I go walk down the hallway to take, to go to the bathroom to take a dump first thing in the morning. And of course, I bring my phone with me because God forbid I shit in peace. To start my day off, I have to go shock myself into the horribleness of the world. I'm sitting there going to the bathroom, looking at the news on my phone, like, oh, that Ebola is still dead. People are dying. I'm going to be dead from this pretty soon. Anyway, so that's what I'm doing on the toilet, right? And I'm just thinking about all the stuff I got to do that day. And I get up and I go to flush the toilet and I look and I notice that it looked as if someone had dumped a keg of blood into the toilet. I mean, a keg. And it wasn't regular blood like you see in movies. It was the reddest. It was what I describe as nuclear red. It was like glowing. I've never seen a red like this in my life. And it was so much of it. And it seemed to be nuclear powered. And I instantly knew that whatever was wrong inside of me was so bad that I was a dead man. I just knew it. Again, like I said, like whatever this is, it's horrible and I'm not getting treatment for it. So I'm a dead man. Now you would think that that would freak me out. I would think that that would freak me out. But what happened was the opposite. Like all my problems went away. I didn't have to do anything anymore. I didn't have to try to achieve this never-ending pursuit of something I don't know what it is that I'm trying to achieve. Like I tell many people, my life has exceeded my dreams many times over, and I still manage to be miserable most of the time. And I don't know why that is, and I don't know why what I'm trying to achieve, but guess what? That all went away. It all went away. I knew I was dying, and I felt light as a feather. I felt great. You know why? Because I was in the moment. I only know this now in retrospect because I was living in the present. I wasn't living in the future anxiety. I wasn't living in the past regret. I was just living right now. I was, this is it, whatever. And they, you know, all the Zen and the yogis and all, they always say the moment right now, the present, no matter what is happening is okay. And I did feel okay. So I was like, so now what do I do? I'm not going to go write my podcast. I'm not going to do my radio show. I'm not going to worry about my web. I'm not going to write my book. I'm not doing anything. What am I going to do? I still have to plan my death. I'm like, well, I'll call my wife and get her ideas. So then I was like, no, I don't want to scare her. I'll let her finish the day at work and then I'll tell her I'm dying. To me, that was a nice thing to do. So I didn't know what to do with myself. So I just go and get my, I'm like, well, I'll get my dog. I'll take my dog, which is my dog Brownie, which I call him Brownie because he's brown and I'm a writer. And he's a rescue, which that's a whole nother story. It's a great story. But so I'm like, all right, Brownie, come on, let's go for a walk. So we'll take him for a walk. And I take Brownie for a walk 3 times a day. And I take him around the block in my neighborhood. And I live in Pasadena and we live next to a mountain. And the first time ever, I noticed all this stuff I'd never noticed in my neighborhood. I'm like, oh, there's a bougainvillea on my corner. That's beautiful. Look at all the flowers over there. Oh, look how the sun comes around over the mountain. Isn't that nice? Oh, my God, that is so pretty. And look at the guy. Oh, they call this Palm Terrace because it's lined with palm trees. I didn't realize that before. I just would walk my dog with my headphones on, listening to the news, and I never noticed anything. But I noticed all these things, and the air was a little crisper, and the sun was a little brighter, And I never felt more alive and peaceful in my entire life. And I was really okay with it. Like, all that stuff that I had been trying to do my whole life, I didn't have to do anymore. And I could just relax and be who I was. So I get back to my house with Brownie. I make some breakfast. We both eat eggs. He likes his scrambled. So we eat our eggs. I don't know what to do anymore. I don't got nothing to do. So I'm like, well, I'll go on the internet. What else are you going to do? So I open my computer and I go on the internet. I'm like, hey, you know what? Let me look up what it means if you have a keg of nuclear blood in your toilet. I think I'm pretty sure I know what it means. But let's just see what it is, just to be accurate. I know I'm dying. So the first two things that came up when I Google searched it was, yep, you're dying. Yep, you're dying. Oh, by the way, I forgot to tell you this. When my brother told me that he got prostate cancer and I had to go get checked, I also went on the internet and looked it up. And what it said was that if your dad has prostate cancer, it's a 50-50 chance that you'll get prostate cancer. But if your brother has prostate cancer, it's almost guaranteed that you're going to get prostate cancer. And I'm like, oh, great. Now I'm going to get cancer because of my fucking brother, David. He's eating fucking burgers 3 times a day. I'm out here eating salads and we're both getting ass cancer. It doesn't seem fair. So anyway, so cut back to where I left off. I'm at home. I don't know what to do. I don't have anything to do. I'm feeling light as a feather. I'm alive with life because I just found out I'm dying. I feel great. I look up what it means if you have a keg of nuclear red blood in your toilet. The first two things say I'm dying. The third thing that comes up when I Googled it was, did you drink beet juice? And I was like, son of a bitch. The night before, I was at a Mexican restaurant because I wanted some refried beans. And I went in and I saw they had this big machine behind the counter. And I said to the waitress, I said, what is that machine? She said, that's our juicer. We make fresh juices, all kinds, any kind, anything you want. And I saw all kinds of crazy stuff. They had roots there and every kind of crazy. And I go, can you make me a juice? And she said, sure. What kind do you want? I go, a big one. And she said, yeah, but what kind? And I said, whatever you want, whatever you think is the best, make it. Because they, you know, mix it together. So what she brought me over was a 32-ounce beet juice. 32 ounces of red. And she was laughing when she gave it to me. I go, what's this? She goes, oh, you'll like it, like that. And she's kind of laughing. And now what I know, what she knew was that you're going to think you have ass cancer tomorrow. And I'm not telling you, but I do this every once in a while, and it's a big kick for me. That's what I think that she was doing. So then I was like, oh, it was the beet juice. I drank a big gulp of beet juice. That's what this is. I'm not dying at all, Brownie. And then everything came back down on me. 100 million pounds. It was twice as hard because I had thought I had escaped life, and now I had to live. And I had to keep living. And, you know, it's like a command almost. When someone tells you you have to keep living, it's like when someone tells you you have to have fun right now. You have to be funny right now. It's almost impossible. And that's where I'm at. Metal on metal. I'm going to live. Yippee.
Gosh. Wait a minute. How current is this story?
Recent, like 2 months ago.
Oh, my gosh. So you are... Did you get checked?
No.
Wait a minute.
No, I haven't been checked.
Jimmy!
Bend over.
No, wait a minute. This is part of our special... I can't believe this is the end of the story. Wait a minute.
That's the end of the story.
But if you know now that if your brother has prostate cancer...
Yeah.
...that you have a good chance of getting it...
Right, guaranteed.
When are you going? When are you going to get checked?
You know, I have a condition where I have to get... I see an endocrinologist for my bones... And so he does all that stuff. He's the big bone guy in California. He's the top guy. He saved my life once, right? So all these guys couldn't diagnose what I had. I was dying. Nobody could figure it out. He did. So I go to this guy, and he gives me this litany of tests I have to go in every year. Well, I skipped last year. I didn't do it. And so I was supposed to do it this year, too, in July, and I didn't do it again just because my life got busy.
Okay.
And you have to go on a fast to take this test and all this stuff. So I didn't have the time to do that. And so now I'm going to do it now. And then I'm supposed to see him in December because he got busy. He got a job at USC. He doesn't see people anymore, but he's going to see me.
Okay, but what about what Hannes is talking about where you poop and mail it away?
I never heard of that. That's why I'm like, oh, I could do that.
Maybe Kaiser's just trying to save money.
But wait a minute. This is imperative. I think that
you're
we
like,
need
to. I can do that.
How's your brother?
He came out here. He did that thing called the proton therapy.
Yes, I've literally seen billboards about this proton therapy.
Yeah, so it's supposed to be
so it's
good.
Chemotherapy, but less invasive or less damaging to
yeah,
the rest of your body.
Yeah, they can target it. And so you're supposed to not have the erection problems or the incontinence problems afterwards. Yeah. So I don't know if my brother had that or not, but he had another illness right afterwards, but he's all better now. He had like a mini.
Is he still out here or did he go back? And
he's in Chicago or when he's in Indianapolis. So, but he's all retired. He retired. My brother retired.
Well, that's good news.
I'm the youngest boy. He's the second oldest. So there's 12 kids. So he's much older.
Significantly older than you.
Yeah, your siblings?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Philip, David, Cindy, Debbie, Celia, Claudia, Tony, Miles, Danny, Eddie, Dolores.
It sounds so Catholic.
Well, it's funny. We were Catholic. What I like to say is my parents were really Catholic. They almost molested somebody. And anyway, so they were, you know, hardcore. But no.
Yeah, it sounds like they never met a condom they liked.
No, they didn't. That's a sin. A condom is a sin. So they had 10 kids, and I was the youngest. And then my mom, when I went to school, my mom wanted... She didn't know what to do with herself all day because all her kids are in school, right? What does she do with herself?
Right.
I don't know. Maybe relax? So she decides she wants to adopt another baby. After
is she
10
on a
kids.
Reality
yeah.
show?
Yeah.
So she should be, right? So she goes to Catholic Charities, which is they have foster kids.
Sure.
And so she says, I want a baby. They go, well, we don't have a baby, but we have a third grader, Eddie Martinez. Okay. So she wants to get in with them. So she's like, yeah, I'll take the third grader.
Wow.
So she brings home Eddie Martinez.
He's older than you.
Yeah, old. And I'm like, that's what I needed. Another older brother to beat the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Exactly. And he was a badass. This guy was a Tasmanian devil. He could beat the hell out of everybody, too. He was a badass. And I'm like, what the fuck? You know, I don't need another older sibling. Son of a bitch.
Right.
And then I guess it worked because then like the year later, she got a baby, my little sister, Dee Dee. So that was cool.
She got pregnant and had a...
No, it was a foster baby, right? And she was like 6 weeks old or whatever when we got her. I remember how tiny she was. And it was funny because we had a caseworker, a social worker would come over to our house and we had too many kids, right?
Yeah,
and
so how many bedrooms?
So we had to sneak... There was four bedrooms in our house. There were two upstairs and two on downstairs. But my dad had like put it like what they call a dormer on one of the.
Yeah.
So it made one bedroom really big upstairs.
Yeah.
And we all slept in there. And we had like there was four beds, but then we had mattresses on the floor. And when the caseworker came over, we had to slide the mattresses. We had to hide them underneath the beds.
Wow.
This is like The Godfather. So we're going to go to the mattresses.
So that the caseworker wouldn't know that we had too many kids or whatever. My mom was, I don't know what they would have done. I'm sure they would have maybe still let us have the kids, whatever, because it's certainly better than not. But my mom really wanted to keep this baby. So, yeah, we had to fake that there wasn't that many kids and that we all had our own beds.
And your father made enough money to care for all the children for food?
Well, we drank powdered milk.
Yeah, we drank powdered milk.
Yeah.
We had carnation powdered milk
yes.
right under the sink, right by the Comet.
Yes.
So Comet, and then there's Joy, and then there's your milk right
we
there.
We didn't keep it there. We did keep it in the food pantry. But it was so funny because my mom was always, she would always try to convince us that we weren't poor. She would always say, we're middle class.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Mom, we're drinking powdered milk. What are poor people drinking? Just the powder?
They're snorting. They're snorting milk.
See, and I'm the youngest of six, and that's half. I can't even believe half. I mean, I feel like I'm from a big family. Half. That's unbelievable. So how
are
your
I'm one
other...
of two, and I got ignored. So God only knows.
How are your other brothers and their health, and has anybody else gotten checked for prostate cancer?
I don't know. I haven't really talked to anybody else about their prostate cancer. Isn't that funny?
Now, I'm not worried about Eddie Martinez because he wasn't related.
Right. He's not blood-related, right?
In blood-related.
Right.
So, but this is a breakdown of communication in your family.
Yeah.
I mean,
Jimmy, where'd you grow up?
I grew up on the south side of Chicago.
Oh, okay. Well, that's why. It's the Midwest.
I grew up in the Midwest, too, but if somebody has cancer, you got to... Because I'll tell you something, and I'm a cancer survivor, when you fill out forms, it's like, does anybody have cancer in your family? And then I have to say, no, but I did. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's a whole family history.
I know, but there's all sorts of stuff that you don't know about sisters in your family, and you don't know it because you don't know it. It's like Midwesterners, real deep-ass Midwesterners, Chicago, I'm from Milwaukee. It's like you don't talk about anything that you absolutely don't have to. Unless there's a guy who holds a gun to your head and says, call your brother. You're not calling your brother.
Yeah, but what else does there not... I mean, how more pertinent does it need to be?
Pertinence has nothing to do with it. So wait, logic has nothing to do with it.
So how many brothers, not Eddie, but you and how many other brothers?
So that we have 7 boys, 5 girls in my family.
Okay, so the 7 boys. So you and your other brothers have never said, hey, are you guys going to get checked for prostate cancer?
No.
This just takes my breath away.
No, it's never hasn't come up.
And you've also had this impactful moment of realizing, you know, sometimes when we realize we only have the one life,
yeah.
we start living the one life.
Yeah.
So you had that experience. Then you had the experience ripped away from
yes.
you when you realized it was the beet juice.
Yes. So,
but you're so fucking smart.
I'm not that smart.
But how is this escaping you?
Oh, see, that's what I'm telling you. I'm not smart. People always say I'm smart. I'm just informed, which is different. But, no, how is it escaping me that I need to get tested and what have you?
Right.
Well, it was kind of, you know, I'm trying to make sense of that experience still. I'm trying to figure out. So that changed me. So I realized I'm not living my life right because if someone tells me I'm dying, I feel fantastic. So I know I'm doing something wrong. So I've been trying to figure it out. It turned out I have a little bit of workaholism in me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I use that as like a distractive, but it's toxic the way I relate to work. I overwork, I overschedule, I overdo things, and lots of things fall through the cracks because of it and what have you. But also I achieve a lot too, right? So I wrote a book, which I never thought I would ever write a magazine article, let alone a book, and I'm proud of it.
Yeah.
And I've had several Comedy Central specials and what have you, and I'm doing another one in soon. Anyway, so I get to do a lot of things. I write a radio show every week, and I do a lot of things, but I don't do them. I'm not relating to how I work in a healthy way. I'm relating to it in kind of a frantic...
Searching for something.
Yeah, so...
You said that earlier, you know, how you're kind of struggling and searching for this ending that you don't even know what the end could be. I mean, in other words, you could say, well, late night talk show host. There's the ending right there.
Well, I'm falling into this trap... It's life is a hoax, right? So I'm listening to this guy he's a philosopher named Alan Watts, and he was talking about this, and I related to, and he says, you know, life is a hoax. When you're born, everybody tells you this great thing's coming. You got to get in kindergarten, you got to get ready for first grade, and when you're in first grade, you got to get ready for second grade, and this thing's coming, and then you get to high school, and you got to get ready for college, and this thing is coming,
right.
And then you go to graduate school, and then you get your first job, and you're at a sales meeting, and they give you a quota, and when you meet it, but this thing's coming, and then it starts all over again, and then you end up, you're 40 years old and you might be vice president, whatever, and you've arrived and you feel no different
right.
than you did before, and in fact you feel a little cheated because what they told you
never
didn't come true. Yeah. It
right.
never came
right.
And yet I did achieve all these things and I worked my ass off and I did this, and yet here I am, the same guy. I don't feel any different.
So Jimmy, gosh,
and they don't talk about this, and I mean they talk about
yeah, and people,
keep achieving.
No, I agree with you, and I have a similar, it's like, yeah, and people will be like, well, that's negative. It's not negative. It just is.
It is just
it's
is.
Like we just
I
have
know,
this.
But you're striking a chord with me as a cancer survivor
uh-huh.
that I'm trying to implore you that mm-hmm. prostate cancer is quite curable if there is a problem. But Dan Fogelberg just died.
Right.
I mean, he was fine and then he wasn't fine. And so there's a turning with cancer where it is no longer a curable. Do you
right.
know what I mean? I mean, there it's a medical, scientific, and you're so smart, I would think that maybe you would...
emotional.
And I'm not dismissing what you're saying by trying to make the joke
right.
I'm making about his Midwesterness is a joke because it's true. It's like, yeah, okay, wait, you saw the movie Nebraska.
Right.
Did you see Nebraska? Okay. You should see Nebraska because it's like, I always say this to people at work who are like, not white people. I say, if you want to understand white people, watch the movie Nebraska, because it's Bruce Dern goes back to his hometown after 40 years and his 10 brothers who are all bald farmers in Omaha or wherever the fuck they are, and they're sitting in a room. They haven't seen each other in decades. They're watching TV, and two of them are talking about a Buick the other one had. And the other 8 are not saying a word. And that's the whole fucking scene.
No,
and it's
get it.
Dead on.
I get it.
I know, yes.
I
you need to go get
guys,
checked, and I need to go fill out my poop thing.
But those guys don't have a radio show, and those guys don't have a podcast, and those guys don't have a super smart wife.
You know what you're doing? Ooh, I just figured out what you're doing. You're creating, it's like he says he's not smart. Obviously he's smart, but he's not. You're equating his ability to accomplish things with therefore having not being a human being who grew up in a particular way and also not having a normal fear of death. Like, well, obviously I'm smart enough to write a book and have a podcast. I'm smart enough to go to the doctor. That's got nothing to do with it.
It's more of an emotional thing because like I said, I realized that when I thought I was dying is when I was at my happiest. So I'm not afraid of death. You know, I remember when I was depressed. I went through my first depression and I would get on a plane. And I used to worry. It was so funny when I realized I used to worry about the plane crashing. And then this one time I was getting on and I was like, I dare you. Go ahead, crash. Go ahead. I dare you. And it really took the fear out of flying for me. That was right. Nice because I didn't give a shit. I was like, go ahead. Right. I would love it.
I guess what I'm saying is, though, that you had this epiphany mm-hmm. after hearing your brother's story and then seeing what was in the toilet.
Right.
You had an epiphany enough to go on a website and get information that, especially since your brother had it, that there's a very good chance. You know what I mean? So now we have this knowledge.
Right.
And so now...
First, I need to find a reason. I need to turn that around of why... I felt good about dying. Like that's so what I'm trying to do now, like, you know, you talk about achievement. So if the way we're conditioned in our life and as human beings is to always look towards the future, that happiness is going to be on the other side of achievement. And if you just achieve something, you'll be happy. But once you get there, you're still conditioned to keep looking towards the next thing.
Yeah.
And so making plans for the future are worthless unless you have the ability to live in the present. So once you get there, once I get to the other side of achievement, I don't know how to be present. I'm still, again, looking towards the next achievement.
But there is no achievement because
But that's how everyone lives, and that's the big hoax of life.
Right.
And they don't ever tell you how to live in the present. So that's what I'm trying to get to right now. I'm trying to learn how to live in the present moment.
Well, I think the first step is that you're acknowledging it. You can talk about it and you understand this whole cycle. There was once an analogy about, you know, you want to be a famous actor and actress. And so, you know, you make these achievements. Then you get to the Academy Awards and you win the Academy Award. Then you go to the after party and then you get called into the VIP room and then you're going to get your picture taken. But guess what? Jennifer Lawrence just walked out the door. You missed her. You know, so fuck, you missed her. You missed the whole thing. You know what I mean? So there is no ending. I guess I'm just saying that we're vocalizing these things. Honest, you're talking about these Midwestern people. They don't vocalize anything. They don't even have those epiphanies. They're so clammed up.
Yeah.
But Jimmy Dore is sitting here talking about
the
person.
No, he's right. But he's still, and he's able to tell us he had the epiphany. But that doesn't mean it's penetrated completely yet.
Right.
I know it seems crazy to you.
Well, the epiphany is that I was doing it wrong. And that I need to do it right. And I know what the problem is, that my brain is conditioned to live in the future instead of living now. And I think that's a lot of people's problems. Like I said, you know, that we're conditioned to look towards the future and our happiness is on the other side of achievement. And that's not true.
Yeah.
Once you get there, you still feel exactly the same and I do feel cheated. And so now I'm trying to figure out how do I keep motivating myself to achieve things in life when I know that it won't bring me the feeling I'm looking for. So
but
that's
you,
what's
you
hard to
do. You
do
get that feeling at times, right? With your wife, you guys do something you love to do together. You laugh. I mean, these are all moments in the present.
So here's what I've noticed, right? So over the last couple of years, I got busy doing a web series and a radio show and things, and I'm writing a book. And I didn't go out and do comedy as much as I normally do. I used to go out, you know, 4, 5, 6 times a week at least to do comedy in Los Angeles. And now I'm going out maybe once a week, and because I've got other things to do. And, well, I got this, an hour special I'm coming up taping in a couple weeks that I just got the offer like 2 months ago. Somebody said, hey, we'll want to do, New Wave said, we'll do an hour special with you. And so I was like, oh boy, I got to get out and get ready for this. I have to go tune up. So I started getting dates and I'm going out every night. And I realized this is what is missing in my life. Like this makes me feel present. When I'm on stage, I'm not thinking about yesterday. I'm not thinking about tomorrow. I'm thinking about right now,
that's
this
right.
joke. And so consequently, I could be dead tired driving to the comedy club. But when I get off stage, I am filled with energy and life.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this is what's been missing in my life. And I also started taking piano lessons.
Ooh.
And that... Again, I'm totally in the present. When I'm done playing piano, I'm energized. I'm not thinking about the future, yesterday.
Right.
I'm just thinking about making the music right now. I'm in it. And so what this other guy said, so what this guy, let me just say this, what he's concluded, Alan Watts, is he says the meaning to life, by the way, there is no meaning to life, right? The, what people are looking for is the sense of having been alive.
Mm-hmm.
And what, so that's what I'm, there is no meaning to life. The only meaning to life is the meaning you give it.
Here's what's so interesting about playing a musical instrument is because I take piano lessons on my own and I play guitar and I know I'm never going to be a fantastic guitar player and I know I'm never going to be a classical pianist, uh-huh. but I also can enjoy right now. I can
right.
enjoy that I only have these 3-4 chords or whatever. This
right.
is where I'm at. And so that music is a great equalizer in terms of like no matter how old you are, you have to start at zero. You've never touched a piano
right.
to touching the piano to playing music. I mean, there's just a level of always moving up, but you're never going to get there because you're not a prodigy. But that doesn't mean it's not worth playing the piano.
Correct.
Right, and it's all about yes. the journey, and it's never about the destination.
So
well, that's exactly...
You just need to be getting out more,
so he was,
more comedy.
Like, for instance, he used this guy, Alan Watts, does this metaphor about music. And he says, you know, life is like music. You know, the point... People think life, it's a destination. You got to get somewhere, and even at the end, or maybe heaven's waiting for you, whatever it is, there's yeah. There's a goal that you're trying to get towards. He goes, but then you get there at the end, it's over. He goes, but that's not the point of life. Life is like music. The point of music isn't to get to the end of the song as fast as possible.
Right.
Otherwise, people will go to a symphony, the guy would come out and hit the cymbals, boom, and it'd be over. And they go, look how fast he did that, right?
Yeah, yeah. Right.
So that's not the point of music, is the music itself. There is no point to music. The point is to dance while you're alive.
Okay.
And that's it. So enjoy the music. Enjoy. So that's what I'm trying to focus on now in my life. Like, and I'd always thought that the external rewards would make me feel happy. That's not. What makes you feel happy is totally losing yourself in something you enjoy doing. And that's when you lose time. It's like when people call about, you know, being in flow. You know, they're in flow and they lose track of time. And so that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to get present.
Okay,
and that's
so,
what all Buddhists, that's what meditation does.
Right.
It gets you. So I'm trying to do that.
So now we know that you have had an epiphany.
Yes.
And now we know that comedy helps soothe your soul.
Oh, very much.
Comedy, getting out.
Yes.
Being in front of an audience, having
yes.
that pressure put on you.
Yes.
Okay, so now we know those things. Therefore, you want to keep doing them in the future. Okay?
Yes.
Okay, so therefore... For your not only yourself, but for your family and for your wife, because you don't want her to go through a lot of trouble.
That's
right?
correct.
Therefore, you get tested for the prostate cancer because we have information that it runs in your family.
Yes.
And we also know that you can be cured if you happen to have it. So there's nothing to be afraid of. You just get that test and we move on.
Okay.
Because if you don't, and then it's too late.
Christine will, no. And Christine,
I'm
I'm not. I'm not.
Not really.
No,
a joke.
Christine is not joking and. I can add, Christine, I can add to your argument there. You only have to drive to Yorba Linda. Let's say the worst happens and you have to go through the same proton therapy
did,
your
yeah.
brother did.
Right.
You don't have to come across the country.
Right. No,
you can just go
here.
To Yorba Linda.
That's right.
Tell us about the new Comedy Central special coming up.
So I'm recording it in a couple weeks. And, you know, it's kind of based on the book I wrote, which is called Your Country Is Just Not That Into You.
Right.
And which is doing really well. So it's kind of like I take shots at the, you know, Wall Street, the culture, and I make a lot of jokes about the media. And, of course, yeah. I have a lot of jokes about my family and my dog and eating and things like that.
But when we were talking, when Christine and I were talking, we got sidetracked into politics earlier because of your political. So you said there was stuff you wanted to say. I mean, it's like, yeah, you were the Republicans are one thing. It's not enough. Do you agree with me? We don't have enough parties.
I agree with
we
you.
We need much more like Europe.
Everything you were saying, I was applauding. You were 100% right.
All right. That's what I wanted to hear.
Wow.
The only thing I would say is that, you know, you say the reason why the Republican Party has kind of left you or the left. The
regular, no, it isn't left me. I mean, I was never a Republican.
Right.
But I could conceive of it.
So it's not the Bob Dole party anymore, right? Mm-hmm. It's the Louis Gohmerts and the Sarah Palins and the Michelle
Bachmans.
Yeah,
it's gone completely from people. Bob Dole was right. like, hey, this country, you know,
Fox News had
whatever
a lot
we want to do
that.
Is we want to make this country work. See, Republicans used to want to make work with Democrats. Therefore, we would have roads and an army and a forest.
Well, I talk about...
And now they're like, The government should have nothing to do with anything.
Except Ebola. What George Carlin used to say is he talked about the owner class, the people who run the country, not the government. It's the people who own the government. And that they pretend to give us a choice in our elected leaders, which is totally true. Like, for instance, the last election was really important because it was Mitt Romney against Barack Obama. Now, if Mitt Romney was going to win, we would have got RomneyCare, but Barack Obama won, so we got RomneyCare. You see, you're going to get whatever the corporation wants.
He wouldn't have done socialized medicine.
This isn't socialized medicine. This is the right wing. If there was a left in this country, Barack Obama would have proposed a Medicare for all, which is the left solution to our healthcare problem, but he didn't. He proposed the Republicans' plan, which is cooked up by the Heritage Foundation, and that was Mitt Romney's plan.
Obamacare before it existed.
Before it existed.
He had it in Massachusetts.
I know, but would he have taken that nationwide? Would he have wanted to? Would he been allowed to by his party?
Well, I think so. And here's why, because you know, once you're governing, people want results, mm-hmm. right? So that's once you become like the guy Brownback is in Kansas right now, and he's going to lose re-election because he put in all these right wing policies of cutting taxes and cutting education budgets, and now their state got downgraded. So their economic policies don't work. But what I'm saying is, there's one party in America. It's the corporate party. The Republicans would love to. They have to still differentiate themselves from Barack Obama. But Barack Obama is a Republican, right? In a lot of ways. He's like a Bob Dole Republican. The Republicans would love to go against his banking policy. It's their banking policy. He would love to go against his foreign policy, his war policy. It's their war policy. Everything he's doing is what. So they have to even pretend to oppose his healthcare plan, which they know is their healthcare plan.
Conservatives don't like accurate information. They don't want the information, the truthful information out there.
Well, there is a right wing information bubble. But what's hilarious to me is that what the big breakdown in America is the fourth estate, meaning the news journal. Journalism in America, right? So we have Brian Williams is our number one newsman, and he goes on TV and he says, I report the news right down the middle. And I'm like, really, Brian? I didn't know there was two sides to the truth. Mm. What if you were a newsman in England? There's three political parties. How would you play it down the middle there? Oh, I guess you just have to report factually back to us, and then we would have to make our own decisions.
Yeah. Are there any news anchors that you like?
No.
Interesting.
And well, it's all corporate, right? So Brian Williams works for NBC, which during the Iraq War was owned by General Electric. Mm-hmm. Which was a big defense contractor. Ugh. And my question to Brian Williams is, how many checks do you take from a defense contractor in the middle of an illegal war before you stop calling yourself a journalist?
Oh, boy.
Not only that, but Brian Williams would bring on retired generals to tell us the straight dope about what was happening in Iraq so we can make a decision as an informed electorate. Well, it turned out all those generals were on the take. They were being paid by defense contractors. Brian Williams never told us that. The guy who did tell us that won a Pulitzer Prize for investigating it. And now the number one story of the last decade, the Iraq War, our number one newsman, totally let us down on it. Only that, he misinformed us, and he was taking checks from a defense contractor. So when people say that the news media is liberal, that's just because they don't want you to get any accurate information ever. The right wing wants to have their own information bubble, right? And so if you ever get any accurate information, that goes against their narrative that Ronald Reagan never raised taxes and kids won't get pregnant if you don't tell them about sex. So that's what they're talking about, liberal media. The liberal media, if they don't make the news for me and you. They make the news for the people who pay their bills, which are their advertisers. So if the media is liberal, then it's being brought to you by Walmart, the military industrial complex, and oil giants. I don't think they're funding liberal media.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I just have to say this real quick, because you just reminded me of something, and you were talking about Barack Obama, I support Barack Obama. But this idea that Barack Obama is some giant liberal. Always struck me like the far right wing and the far left wing both believed this illusion that he was a giant. He was always moderate to right. Always. He was, and nothing about him before he became president should make any reasonable person think, you know, we're electing like the biggest liberal since Kennedy, who probably wasn't even as big a liberal as think he is.
LBJ was a liberal there.
Yeah. It's like Barack Obama has never been a super left-wing liberal. It's never been true.
No,
and
not at all.
And so the right is like whatever they're doing, but the left is like, we're so disappointed. How can you be disappointed in a guy? He is what he's...
I was one of those guys. I was super disappointed. Yeah. Maybe it's because, you know, I'm a liberal, so I wear rose-colored glasses sometimes because I want things to be good. And I thought that his rhetoric was liberal.
Yeah.
You got to say, I mean, his campaign speeches, which
so
is
you're
what...
He played into it.
Yes.
Even though I remember looking and going, well, you're not really
Hillary Clinton ran right, so he went left.
Right.
Right. So he went, and he had this thing that he voted against the Iraq war. That's how he won that primary. And,
yeah.
and Hillary Clinton screwed herself because she voted for the Iraq war because she's also a corporatist. She used to sit on the board of Walmart, right?
Yeah.
Her husband deregulated Wall Street, which then crashed the economy within a decade. You know, banks used to go do bubbles and busts every 20 years. And then FDR said enough of this, and he put in all these banking regulations. One of them was Glass-Steagall. Well, Bill Clinton got in bed with Wall Street because he got the shit scared out of him by Ronald Reagan. And so he got in bed with Wall Street. That was the end of the left in America. And now the Wall Street runs the country. And Barack Obama said, you know, we got to save Main Street and save Wall Street. Well, we all know he didn't do a fucking thing for Main Street. And all the money went to Wall Street. And let me just say this about Wall Street. If I could screw my wife half as good as Wall Street has screwed our economy, I wouldn't have to go through her emails.
Jimmy Dore, we need you. Like, we need you as a voice in America. And your show is so razor sharp.
I appreciate you saying that.
But I hear you talking, and then I think, like, Jesus, you got to take care of yourself, man.
Uh-huh. Well, I'll just say this, that we're living, corporations are making record profits again, right? The banks are also making record profits again. But there's the biggest income disparity in America since the Gilded Age, which means it's a rigged economy. And the people who are generating the profits, meaning the workers, are no longer sharing in the fruits of their labor.
So corporations are sitting on their money. They're not putting it back into the economy.
You are correct. You are, because they're sitting on $5 trillion, and they say they don't invest it back in our economy because they don't have confidence. And what I say is if $5 trillion doesn't give you confidence, I'd try dance lessons.
Yeah.
Wow. Jimmy Dore, we really need you in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Really. Okay.
It's, you know, I wish Barack Obama was a liberal. It would be nice, but the left is dead in America. It's all over with.
Okay, so let's not worry about your endocrinologist. Let's call a urologist? Whoever it is going to send you the poop
proctologist?
Kit. Proctologist? Whoever can send you that poop kit that Hannes was talking about. Let's
is it
just
your
take
proctologist who sends you that?
No, it's
general?
It was just
an
part
internist.
Of a regular, it's just a regular checkup thing.
Oh, okay.
Do you get
come
regularly
in give blood.
Checked up?
No.
Okay, so there's
well, my regular checkup is with my endocrinologist, which I've been skipping.
I know,
so
we need to get
well,
on
okay,
this.
Jimmy and I both promised. I'm going to do my poop thing that I forgot about. It's in my thing. And you're going to go and get checked, okay?
Yeah, I will. I promise.
You're supposed to just have a yearly checkup. Everybody is. You know, when you get certain age, you just go every year.
I promise I'll be checked up before Christmas.
Hey, you want to play some Shotgun Story with
me? Yeah, let's do it.
It can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the Storyworthy Wheel of Truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
Fish. Okay. So here's my fish story. I love sushi. And, I decided to treat myself and go to the number one sushi guy in the valley. And so you walk into the sushi place, and it's one of those bare, it's like a wake. You're in a funeral parlor. There's no music playing. There's no art on the wall. It's all about the sushi, and this guy is serious about it. So we get what they call omakase, which is where he just decides what to give you. You don't get to order. So we're eating it. We get to the last thing, a couple of things we didn't like. We get to the last thing. We go, okay, I think we're full. And he gives us one more thing, and it was orange, and it was called sea urchin. Well, I'd never eaten sea urchin before. I put it in my mouth. It was the most disgusting thing I'd ever eaten in my life. I was like, hey, this tastes like shit that went bad, okay? Because is your shit spoiled? Because that's what this tastes like. I didn't say that to him, but I did spit it out into a napkin and leave because you don't want to offend the sushi chef. So that's my fish story. Never eat sea urchin again.
Yeah, I think sea urchin is made of roe, right? It's the egg.
I don't know what they make it.
Roes are eggs, yeah.
Yeah, it's the eggs. And it has like the consistency of vomit, right?
It's horrible.
Yeah, it is horrible.
I love
sushi to death, but that's the only thing
don't
I
don't insult
eat
the sushi chef. Like,
yeah, I don't know.
The guy
funny?
Just put shit in your mouth. You're like, don't upset him. It's like the hairdresser. Don't upset him.
I think it's my Catholic upbringing, right? I have authority figures. I look up
to stuff. My favorite part of that was, all right, I love sushi. So I go to the best sushi guy in the valley. Now, people don't know, the valley is just a desert. You know, it's like, we're always out here eating sushi. Like, you drive to Bakersfield or you drive and you'll go and there'll be a sushi place. And I'm like, We are so fucking far from water. How fresh could this possibly be?
They fly it in. They fly it in.
Well, no, but Vegas is one thing. The guy on the road to Vegas.
Yeah, in other words, he has
How old is his fish?
Be in an airplane or be in a car.
Yeah, you gotta. You can't be getting this. You gotta know where you're getting your sushi from.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's.
Where is the top sushi guy in the valley? What?
There's a 7-Eleven on Vineland.
Studio City. They've got whole sushi row.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Studio City was on Ventura.
It's all everything's right there.
And they say, you know, they say you see George Clooney in there by himself a lot of times. That's the
one I've seen George Clooney in. I've seen George Clooney. In a sushi restaurant, and then the very next night I saw him at the Troubadour.
Oh, really?
I kid you not, we made eye contact just for a second. It was like, oh, yeah, man, I saw you last night. Like that.
Ah, just for a second. That's not what he was thinking. He was thinking, another person is staring at me because I'm George Clooney. Why is she wearing the wrong bra?
Ah!
I call it a callback, ladies and gentlemen. Good night.
We got to wrap this up. I want to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network, especially Maria Spertolozzi. You are so good at what you do over there. You know how I know she's good? Because she's just quiet and she nods.
She has a mic. She can say something.
She's not like
say
staring
something.
At her phone. She's not
staring. What do you want me to say?
See,
close enough. That's good enough.
Microphone. So thank you, Maria. And I'd also like to thank John Thomas Griffith. You know, he's the guy that wrote the theme song, Follow Me.
He did. He did. He wrote that after his proctologist kept writing him letters.
Hey, listen, man. So you know,
why are you following me?
John Thomas Griffith went through open heart surgery.
That's true.
He had his whole health scare. You guys, look, we turned 50. We got health scares and we have to address it. That's all I'm saying. And on behalf of our storyteller tonight,
that's
Jimmy
podcast
Dore,
gold.
Go get tested. God damn it.
Yes.
Well, on behalf of you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story worthy week.
And you can follow me. Follow me. I'll take you down to the river. Follow me. Follow me. I'll keep you silent.
Thanks for joining us on the Story Worthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.